not those lions. Three lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.
7:34 this morning. Let's get right into it. It's the Gillette Performance Rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on the second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's Performance Rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances have just lacked that intensity.
So, we give away a Gillette starter performance pack, a Gillette starter pack, as part of the performance rankings every week. All you got to do is tell us who should be in the green, who should be in the red, and who's in the amber. And if you want to give us those categories, Owen, green is good, I presume.
Green tends to be good, red tends to be bad, and amber tends to be grand. And it's up to you to say why we've got this thing completely wrong. A little bit difficult to pick where certain things go this morning. I think it's fair to say that we know what the big events are from the weekend, but some of them it's kind of hard to realise, is this actually a good thing, is it a bad thing, or is it a grand thing? So I'm open to your criticism this morning. One thing which we can't get away from, which is certainly in the bad, which was the first thing in the red this morning, is the hurling refereeing. And I'm not even sure if it actually comes with the territory of hurling refereeing, oof, hurling rule making, hurling in general. I don't know what is the first negative thing here.
Who is more touchy about the rules than hurling people when it comes down to it? No one. There is no coterie in world sport that is more don't touch our game, that is more cocksure that their game is perfect. And you know, they did flag up that there could be some controversy around these rules.
Yeah, true as that may be, I do think, in fairness, there was a groundswell of opinion that there was cynicism creeping into hurling over the last couple of years. I do think that there's been talk about maybe the high-scoring nature of hurling from the doyens of talking about hurling and writing about hurling. And I think maybe, yeah, that notion is out there that maybe hurling people are quite protective of the game, but I do think, in fairness, there's been a lot of people inside the tent, as it were, to actually encourage this and to try and encourage debate around whether or not rules should be changed.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of agree with you to a point. But it's interesting what you said there a moment ago. I mean, you're tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but the fact that this penalty decision yesterday kind of ruined the game, and I do think that's kind of factored into maybe a lot of frustration. And I'm not saying this is the entire thing at all, but the idea of this happening at a certain point in the game when an underdog was going very well and it turned again to the point where the underdog stopped doing well, I think that's adding to how emotionally
explain
charged
what happened.
This conversation
a lot of people, as I said, watching a lot of stuff. So exactly what happened?
So what you've got is a Clareman right inside a tip man right inside the 21-metre line. The problem was he was closer, and I saw someone pointed this out on social media, he was closer to the Ennis Road than he was to the opposition goal. He was out by the sideline, basically. He goes past his man. His man goes in with a cynical challenge. In fairness, it looked like a cynical challenge. You could almost say, like, what sort of body shape is he in? Did he challenge with his legs? It certainly didn't look anywhere close to legal.
It was like you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Peter Schmeichel being in goals, but Peter Schmeichel used to do the kind of European handball style.
Spread your body wide.
Yeah, and that's what it was like, except it was a kind of a body slam.
Yeah.
WWE.
That's it. And the problem was that there were another two Claremen in the general vicinity of that, also quite close to the Ennis Road. And when play developed, those two men had caught up with play to the point where it really looked like that he was actually in a body of players, let alone being true on goal. And how on earth this could be deemed as a goal-scoring opportunity, one could never really find out an appropriate answer to that question. But one person who did was the referee, and he sent the player to the sin bin, obviously with the new rule, and gave a penalty. So it was extremely punishing for Clare, and as a result of that, Tipperary destroyed them over the course of the next 10 minutes and won the game. It was, in fairness, a huge part in where the result went. I will say one thing is that when we're looking at the analysis of it in the aftermath, those players that are tracking back, it seemed that even on television, they were being highlighted in a place where they had stopped running after the foul had committed, rather than analysing where the players were
before,
while the foul was being committed.
Yeah.
AKA what the referee saw in real time.
The whole world made their mind up immediately that this decision was outrageous and egregious and an example of the worst excesses of referees and the rules, and this is a complete disaster. But actually, there's loads of mitigating factors, right? One is that if the rules made any sense, you would be able to be sin binned for that, but it not be a penalty, because it was absolutely a cynical, as cynical a professional foul as you can have in any sport. It was somebody bringing somebody down. He might not have been about to score a goal, but certainly it was. He's creating an overlap where it is 3-on-2 because he's clean through, right? And you're going to foul him closer to the goal and make it a more obvious foul that you're trying to stop the goal scoring opportunity. Like in any intercounty match where you have players who are supremely proficient with the ball in hand, if it's 3-on-2, then there's a goal scoring opportunity. It's just not completely obvious. And so I think that the double jeopardy that they got rid of in football, soccer, over the last couple of years, makes perfect sense. You know, the red card and the penalty is too much. The sin bin and the penalty is too much, particularly when you have players who can pass the ball to the net. I mean, the penalty, we're not going to talk about the penalty enough, right? Mm. The penalty was a thing of beauty. He didn't blast it at all. It was just like a little, I'm just going to pass that into the bottom corner of the net. And the Clare goalkeeper didn't even move because it's like, he's expecting the blast. And then it's, oh shit, he just anyway, that was a tangent we didn't need to go down. I think that, like, I have a lot of sympathy for James Owens. He is absolutely getting murdered in the papers today.
And the thing is, like, I think it's the front of the Examiner that asked the question, rule or ref, is it?
The rule or the ref is the front
and
of
I think
the...
I think that's a good front page. I think, like, I think to even entertain that question last night might have seemed like sacrilege in the heat of the night. It did feel that this was one man's problem and nobody else was at play here. But I think you're onto something there in terms of the double jeopardy that's actually involved. Like, I do think that the rule is a little bit to blame in this, or at least it gives us a greater understanding.
Well, it's completely to blame. The fact that
I think James Owens is to blame as well. I think it's a bad refereeing decision, and I think it's
You can see how he makes it, because somebody else is pointing out later on that there was on the Examiner podcast last month, the referee had said there's going to be a big controversy when it happens out by the sideline, because obviously the referees have been told you're inside the 21. We're giving these away to stop these types of tackles, which are completely cynical.
And that's it. Like, you've got to ask yourself, why was the rule brought in the first place? And it's actually to stop the type of tackle that occurred in that situation yesterday. Now, the thing is, they wanted that to be in the type of tackle, but in a more central position.
Well, more obvious.
Yeah, more
blatant.
Obvious.
Was it not a goal scoring opportunity? It was.
It ticks one of two boxes for me. It was cynical, but it wasn't a goal scoring opportunity. And they want to get rid of the cynicism, but they want to get rid of cynicism in a certain area of the pitch, which is a very, very hard thing to legislate for. That is very much into the grey area, and that is why then you leave the referees in a position where they're unable to make the correct calls all of the time. I will say, the reason why James Owens, I would say, is being hammered even more is because on the other end of the pitch, Clare had a stonewall penalty / sin bin, which was not given, and that just will be making the blood of Brian Lohan boil continuously throughout this week. That was a disgrace of a decision if you're going to give one at the other end, and that is why he's being hammered. But I think in isolation, that one incident that everybody's going to be talking about for this week, it is as much, not as much, but it is to do with the rule as well as the ref.
If I was still managing Clare, I'd probably be looking at a lengthy suspension this morning. There's no way I'd be able to keep my mouth shut. What referee James Owens did yesterday was simply off the wall, says Gerlach Nan. The decision to give a penalty coupled with a stint in the sin bin for Ed McCarthy left hurling followers everywhere scratching their head. Some are blaming the rules, but refs always have to use common sense as well as the rule book.
So you
can't. Do you know? It's...
Unfortunately, I mean, it would be a great world if you could, like, just literally use common sense only, but then there would be no need for a rule book.
Referees still have to gauge a situation and make a call. How Owen thought that incident merited a penalty and sin binning beggars belief. To me, it was one of the most farcical things I've ever seen. And I've been watching hurling for over 50 years. It has to be called out. On RTE, they were droning on and on about the rules.
But the thing is, it probably is one of the most farcical things we've ever seen. And it's just, whose fault is it?
Look, I think that the rule doesn't exist, but you shouldn't be allowed to commit fouls like that, should you?
No, and like...
So what should the punishment be? Just a yellow card?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you know?
The thing is, what happens afterwards in terms of the Shanahan foul kind of flies in the face of this. But it would be interesting to see if there is actually a reaction to this, as in if that is played over again, does a defender all of a sudden not dive into the attacker?
Maybe.
Stands off just a yard and all of a sudden the goal scoring opportunity presents itself in a more fair way, because that would be the exact reason why a rule is brought in to encourage more of that play. So I'll be interested to see if this is actually the outcome. But as I say, what flies right in the face of that is that a few minutes later, Clare should have had the exact same thing and the rule.
Well, if he just had done it again, then we'd all be like, oh, they were two. That's very serious. This is having an impact on the game. What was the difference?
Yeah, and then that's where when it comes back to the ref.
A decision like this brings the game into disrepute. That's the front cover of the Irish Independent this morning. And Nicky English thinks that the decision was so egregious that ultimately they're going to end up changing the rules because of it. I believe what happened may well be a rule-changing event when it's analysed and debated.
And I'll be interested to see what that involves. So does it just go back again to where we were last year?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, the hurling managers have, in the past, managed to get every significant rule change kicked out by screaming about it. Don't F with cats.
That's exactly it. For me, the best, what they wanted to achieve with this is to encourage goal-scoring opportunities that can actually make it to the end of play.
Yeah.
Because what we were having goal-scoring opportunities that ended the vast majority of the time, unless the attacker was extremely quick, was ending in a player being held up, dragged down, and the defender saying, look, I'll take my chances with a penalty here because you are definitely going to score if you go by me. So they wanted to encourage more of a situation where a defender can be rushed by and maybe doesn't have the advantage of being able to pull a player down. That's why they're going for it, and they want to stop cynical tackles. And if that's what happens, then maybe this will have a positive outcome. I do think it was just a terrible look, and I do think if you go back to what you were saying at the start about maybe people in every sport being defensive of their own game and defensive of change, anybody who is even a little bit conscious of what this might do to the game in terms of just general change, then their opinion will be totally hardened after yesterday.
Will says, the Dublin Hurlers beat Galway. They were the second favourites for the All-Ireland. Not one pundit gave them a chance beforehand. If they're not top of the performance rankings, it will render the rankings null and void forever.
But we're going to have Galway man James Gehill with us a little bit later on to give us his take on what happened to Galway and what happened to Dublin. I mean, this big step up into obviously, we have the 2019 memory fresh in our brains after Dublin managed to get through that group, and obviously a couple of weeks later it ended in disappointment. Is this different? We'll get Skell's take a little bit later on. Of course they're in the green. There's a couple of other things that may have just pipped them, and I apologise in advance for that, but Dublin were great.
You say of course they're in the green, but they're actually not in the green.
Notionally in the green.
Yeah, but you can't just grandfather a lot of things into the green. You made a list, yeah, and there's only two teams in the list, and they're England and Italy, and I'm giving a spoiler alert.
Listen,
Mount
Rushmore 10 heads is how I would build it if I was doing it.
The mutant Mount Rushmore. Okay, so the hurling refs are in the red, and who are you blaming for it?
If I had to pick one person, I'm still picking James Owens as the
scapegoat.
It's just how much he's being blamed is maybe the thing I've got issue with. I think it's just a bad refereeing call, and he had a bad day, but he's not helped by the rule.
Has he not literally just done what he's supposed to do and applied the letter of the law? That is a cynical challenge within the 21. It's a sin bin and it's a yellow card. Like, I know Brian Lowen saying nobody else in the ground apart from him thought that was a yellow card and a sin bin and a penalty, except probably nobody else actually knew the rules. Nobody else has sat down and studied and gone to a bunch of conferences and had a bunch of Zoom calls and gone, in this instance, what are we doing? We're all agreed, we're all going to do that. Okay, grand. Just the fact that he actually had the balls to do what he was supposed to do, he's getting hammered for it. And it's a stereotypical, like, mob rule where it's like, but actually, you know what? Like, maybe Clare are going to have to look back and go, how well did we deal with the sin bin? What was our plan for the scenario where one of our players gets sin bin? Because obviously it's a possibility now. Here's our contingency plan. I'm just saying that, like, it's great to have that to and they still got very close to beating Tipperary. And it was a brilliant performance from Clare, other than that 10-minute period.
Yeah, I still think when you're going to those conferences and you're being told about this new rule, the goal scoring opportunity is the key thing. And it's just very hard to see how that actually was won. There's truth in what you're saying. Like, I think with a lot of these, it's kind of like, is it James Owen's fault or is it the rules' fault? Like, is it either or? And like, I do think that there is... The reason why James Owen has a bad day is in part down to him operating a bad rule or an overly harsh punishment or it being an impossibly hard game to referee. And the reason why James Owen is getting hammered is because people have got entrenched in that opinion very quickly, and we're seeing an analysis that isn't fully accurate. Like, I do think that the screen grab of the two defenders being goal side of the challenge after the challenge happens, it's just not a fair analysis on James Owens. It has to be, where were the defenders when the foul actually happened, or before the foul actually happened, to actually show was the path clear to goal. But just because you got a clear path to goal doesn't necessarily mean it's a goal scoring opportunity because you're out on the sideline, you know, like. I feel for him, for sure, but I still think he takes a bit of the blame fairly after yesterday.
All right. What else is in there? There is a Dublin team in your performance rankings, but they're not the hurlers in green.
I'm sorry. Sometimes it's just hard to find...
Is this more Kerry nonsense? The Dublin footballers, six in a row All-Ireland champions, cruising through the first round of Leinster in fourth gear. First gear?
It depends what sort of... I'm sure they have multiple gears. We all drive automatics now anyway, don't we? So I don't know what gear they were in.
The sponsored automatics?
Yes, absolutely. Like, you will never be happy, I think, is what people for the show will realise. Because if I put them in the green, you'd be like, typical nonsense, trying to overplay the Dubs. I put them in the grand, the exact same thing. But look, I put them in the red, and you're... I don't know why you're claiming that this is nonsense. This is Dublin, and if you go through their winning margins in Leinster over the last couple of years, we all know that they have been comically ginormous, their winning margins in Leinster, to the point where their 8-point win over Wexford yesterday was their smallest winning margin in Leinster since 2013, when they beat Meath by 7 points. Like, you go back to the good old days of 2012 when they beat Wexford by 4 points and Meath by 3 points, and then seven, as I said, the following year in Meath. And then after that, it was basically all double figures. Kildare lost by 9 points in 2017. Last year, their first game was only an 11-point win against Westmeath and Leinster. And then you get down to 8 yesterday against Wexford. It's not a significant statistic. It shouldn't be a significant statistic. But one of the relentless elements of Dublin was the way in which they managed to put these teams to the sword by 20-something points, despite not playing perfectly and despite the game not being that high stakes. Let's face it, because they were always almost guaranteed to win the game regardless. So are we starting to see a little bit of a lack of relentlessness in an 8-point win? Maybe we are. And like, that's the key word here, maybe. We can't for certain say whether or not this is going to turn into a hockeying for Meath next weekend or not. Like, it does look extremely promising if you're looking at things in black and white. The fact that Meath put up a 22-point win yesterday against a decent Longford side who a lot of people would have been afraid of, and the team that beat Leicester by 8 points. Like, that should mean a match this week.
You've been drinking the Tommy Rooney Kool-Aid about how was a banana skin.
But like, there is a greater context here that this is the greatest football team of all time, in that anytime they've had a wobble... There haven't been many of them, but they have responded and made everybody eat humble pie. I think even that Carlow game with Dermot Connolly, and the linesman had that altercation a few years ago, sometimes gets brought up as this moment where they perhaps didn't look great. And like, that was a 12-point win, for example. Their next game was against Westmeath, and they beat Westmeath by 31 points. So that is the sort of, response from Dublin that we've seen whenever they've looked imperfect in Leinster over the years. So that is the caveat for this. But what we can look at is the personnel then, and the squad, and how it's starting to be chipped away at over recent years, and that includes Stephen Cluckson.
Well, I thought you're burying the lead here, getting to this is the most momentous thing that's happened in Gaelic football since last year's All-Ireland final, right?
It 100% is. Will we hear from Desi Farrell? Let's hear what Desi Farrell had to say in the aftermath of yesterday's game in regards to Stephen Cluckson.
No, Stephen Cluckson. The situation is very simple. Stephen isn't with us at the moment. He's gone back to his club, and he's just taking time to heal the body, maybe to regenerate the appetite. I don't know, to be honest, whether Stephen will be back or not. But he's not retired, and he's just stepped away. And I think we've spoken about it as a group. I think he... given the service he's provided over the years, he deserves that respect and that time and space to make up his mind.
Have you spoken to him?
Yeah, we've been in contact, yeah.
Do you get a sense that you'll see him this year, or
I don't,
have you any clarity on that?
I don't know is the honest answer, and it's not that we're trying to play games here in any way. He's asked for time, and I think he deserves the time. And at the end of the day, he's the service he's given to the county has been immense. And when a man asks to step away and take time out, I think a player like Stephen Cluxton deserves that, and we all need to respect that.
Would you have a deadline, Desi? Would you have a deadline for when you'd like to see him back in, given you two young keepers?
We've always operated on the basis that we've an open door policy. That was the same for the last management team, it was the same for any team that I managed at minor under 21 level. And if there's players out there and they're willing to contribute, and we feel they've a contribution to make, then the door is open for sure.
Has Stephen been in with his at all this year?
He's back with his club. He's done some sessions with the coach, goalkeeping coach, all right, but for now he's with his club.
Right, so all that stuff about him being on the return to play stuff from Kieran Kilkenny, it wasn't quite the full story. I'm going to just, the newspapers have decided that it is time up, that they're listening to that and they've got their headlines. Goodbye to the Hill is the back page of the Star, and it's a picture of Cluxton. Stevie Flea, tab of the morning to you. Stevie Flea is the back page of the Mirror. Farrell finally admits Dubs legend Cluxton 39 has stepped away and fears his number one may never return. That's the audio that you've heard. And Clux like the end. There's a late contender for tab of the morning to you, and that is from the Irish Sun. Dubs icon looks set to bow out, and Cluxton steps away. There you go, that one. And then Desi in dark is the Mail's, and the door is open for Cluxton. That's the Herald's. The door is open for Cluxton. That's the headline on Colin Keyes' piece. The last time we had a scenario like this with anybody involved in Dublin, is he, will he, won't he, it was Dermot Connolly, right? Where, I mean, you could say there was a bit of Jack McCaffrey, but there was no sense that McCaffrey was coming back in the middle of the season, whereas with Connolly there was definitely fairly consistent rumours of there being contact. And they brought him back, and they put him in key moments in big games very quickly when he came back. Like when Jim Gavin looked at the bench and needed cavalry, he was like, come on down, you're going to do it. Can't do that with a goalkeeper. It's a completely different scenario. It's not like you can pull off one of the outfield players and put Cluxton on. It's your number one goalkeeper who needs to have the confidence that I am the number one, because at some point I am going to face a wall of 7 foot Mayo midfielders or 12 foot carry forwards and midfielders, a battalion in front of me, and I need to be bulletproof that my team has my back, the movement's going to happen, the wide receivers are going to be where they're supposed to be. And can you do that if there's a constant fear about losing your place to somebody? I don't know. It's a very difficult scenario, and it's hard to see him coming back, and yet Leinster's Leinster, they're going to cruise through it, as we've seen. Even when they're playing really badly, they're still double scores better than the teams that they're playing against.
I think for any sporting culture, Stephen Cluxton, if he comes back, has to be content, first of all, with his place on the bench. Because how can you say to Evan Comerford, we don't know what the story is with Stephen Cluxton, and for Stephen Cluxton to come back in later in the summer and he automatically takes your spot? I'm not sure, does that work in that culture? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he is so revered within the camp, and maybe they know more within the camp, and that is allowed to happen. But I just struggle to see a world in which Stephen Cluxton now comes back and now gets a starting spot for the championship. Because what it would take is for him to come back in, and then for the starting keeper to have a disaster, for him to come back in, and that'll take a couple of games, and it'll take really strong opposition for Evan Comerford, I think, to have a bad game, because he's a really good goalkeeper. So I don't know. I can see why people are now coming out and saying this is the end for Cluxton, because there are a couple of steps for him to get back into that starting jersey.
Yeah.
It looks like he's 40. He's going to be 40 for the start of the next championship after this one. That if he is taking a year out, that is also up against him at that point. For a man who's kept himself in such good shape and has such high standards, that is a factor. It is not, like, I mean, if anybody can do it at 40, it's Stephen Cluxton, first of all. But there is also the element of, do you get off the treadmill and can you keep going?
Yeah.
Maybe not. But he is playing outfield then for his club, and I'm sure he's kept himself in really good shape. It's a very unusual situation. I can see why he is revered, and I can see why Stephen Cluxton gets a special rule, to be honest with you. Maybe it's not fair, but I can see why maybe he would be, it's acceptable for him to say, listen, I just don't know what I want. I can absolutely see why anybody in the world could be in that state of mind at the moment. That after a shortened off season, after an incredibly tough 16 months for everybody, I can absolutely see anyone saying I just need a break from it. But the culture of Dublin would suggest that this is still very strange, that they don't have clarity on one of their most important players.
And in a way, I know people are saying, oh, it's the most Cluxton thing of all time for him to kind of quietly slip out. But actually, it's not quiet now. It's the back page headlines. It's quite un-Cluxton-esque, you know, to be at the centre of a psychodrama like this. And I don't think you can make any bones about the fact that it is the thing that everybody's talking about in the aftermath of that game. Because when you begin to piece together the intellectual property of the players who have drifted away from the panel over the last 12 months in particular, like, that is an amazing football team that you have right there. Like, a team of all-stars and players of the year and greatest ever in their position. And, it's devastating pace and power and, like, brain. Even just losing Keanu Sullivan last week, it's like, Jesus, that's an amazing team that you'd have with Cluxton and Michael Darren-McCauley and Mannion and, you know, all the rest of the names. So, I don't know. I think that Tommy's right to be giving me the chance the weekend.
I think this all plays into the wider conversation around Dublin. That I think that post-match audio from Stephen Cluxton feeds into a bad weekend.
From
Desi Farrell, sorry. feeds into a bad weekend for Dublin. I don't think you can make a case that Cluxton leaving is good news for Dublin. The thing is, it was going to happen eventually. And the way he looked after himself, it was probably never going to happen in a satisfying way for Dublin fans. He was probably always going to leave when he still had a lot to offer. And maybe that point is now. Maybe he does come back at some point, whether it's this year or next year. Maybe he does win another All-Ireland and is still as good as he ever was. But if this is the end, it's a blow. It's a massive blow for Dublin. It just everything about him, coming from the base that he came from with that Dublin team of the 2000s, if we go back to that word culture, in a culture that was toxic at times, that was not conducive to winning All-Irelands, to be a central part of turning that into the best culture we've ever seen in Gaelic games, the most successful team we've ever seen in Gaelic games. That is an unspeakable level that he had got himself to and had dragged all his teammates along with him. You can't replace that. Even if he comes back in as a coach, which I think they should be fighting tooth and nail in order for him to do so at some point in the near future after he hangs up his boots, even if he comes in as a coach, it's just not the same thing as having that guy standing over a really important kick out when the sides are level in an All-Ireland final. It is just not the same thing. He has been through everything. He has experienced the highs and all the lows. And you just can't replicate that if you're coming into this Dublin team right now. It is a huge blow if he's gone.
Yeah.
They're still All-Ireland favourites, but God, it brings him back to the pack.
Well, Kerry are now 2-1. Dublin are 5-4 on. Kerry are 2-1. I don't think Kerry have been as short.
Dublin are still favourites.
Yeah, but like they were unbackable favourites this time last year for like 6, 7, 8, 9 in a row. And all of a sudden it's like, well, not quite 50-50, but we're trending towards it. Right, very quickly. The Ireland rugby team, we might talk about this a bit later in more detail. They're in the meh. Why only in the meh? Scored 39 points.
Yeah, but like the concession rate is probably a factor of why they're pulled back here a little bit. Like Japan, obviously, far better side than they were in the past. Ireland know all about that. Last meeting, obviously, was a complete disaster for Ireland. I think it's more to do with the fact that maybe the team looked extremely strong before the weekend. And I know the British and Irish Lions didn't necessarily, they were good against Japan, but Japan caused some problems. Maybe that should have been a warning before the weekend that just because it was a strong Ireland side, it didn't necessarily mean a routine summer test win, and it was far from that. The side of play still looks a little bit loose. Like, do you want a team who can do both, or do you want a team who's got a more defined style of play? Like, I'm not sure. Like, I think that when you get to the next World Cup, it's going to be in France in the winter. Maybe you do want a team that can do both and can mix it up, can put the ball up the jumper and can also spread it out wide a little bit. Like that McCluskey try with the Peter O'Mahony offload was beautiful. That was silky Irish play. And then there were a couple of moments where you're like, oh, still the line-out has a lot of work to do. Still in structured play, defensively, not perfect. There is still a lot of work to be done. 24 missed tackles is a very, very high number. I don't think you can make too much of an argument that this was a great or even a very good Irish performance at the weekend. The positive is that you're going to see a lot of new faces, I'd imagine, against the USA. And maybe if a lot of people would have been expecting a bit more time to see Gavin Coombs and Craig Casey at the weekend. obviously didn't happen. But USA next up, they lost 43-29 to England at the weekend. So England also had their sort of moment of concern in their summer matchup against a so-called weaker team.
Okay, and very quickly, England and Italy are in the green. How come?
Well, I mean, the England 4-0 against Ukraine. It is happening. It is happening big time. I do think, though, that maybe we've categorised England, Italy, Belgium, Spain, France, etc. into one category and then the rest into another category. So we've subconsciously maybe put Ukraine and Denmark into the same category, which is just a really bad analysis if we've subconsciously done that. I think Ukraine are a far weaker team than Denmark. I think England, quality-wise, are 4-0 better than that Ukraine side on paper. But as we all know, tournaments do not work like that. Tournaments are these strange little things that throw up shocks and throw up underperformances and overperformances. And there was a big cause on the line for Ukraine. Let's not forget, it wasn't just England who had a massive cause on the line, and England prevailed. And I think they deserve a huge amount of credit for that. The most impressive team now. Gone up to number one in the Guardian's power rankings.
Right.
So this is a big moment for English football. It is coming home. And then Italy on Friday night. What an unbelievable game that was against Belgium. So tactically intriguing. Quality was pretty high. Like, I mean, Chiellini and Bonucci back together at the heart of the defence. And Chiellini kind of like shouting at Kevin De Bruyne after he made a block saying, kick the ball harder at me. And Bonucci with his just beautiful over-the-top balls, a brilliant cat-and-mouse game tactically, where Italy tried to pull Belgium out of their press and then pinged a few balls over the top. You've got the tragedy of Spinazzola on the left doing his Achilles. The doctor coming on, even in his suave blazer and his matching gloves, carrying him off the pitch, the player of the tournament, adding a layer of melancholy to this Italian story. It's going to be an entertaining semi-final, no question about it, Italy against Spain. But I think we all want to see Italy against England in the final.
All right. It's 5 minutes past eight. That is this week's performance rankings.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Quickstart car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetSetGo.ie.